Start living. Start listening. From features through music to news. Reflecting your views, this is
CYTR's thing.
CITR 101.9 FM broadcasting live from Vancouver, UBC.
Accelerated program.
Accelerated programming since 1937.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show here on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. That is the NCRA stations across the country. My name's Kelly Rayburn. Along with me is Michael Ruben Cloggs. How are you doing these days?
I'm doing pretty good.
That's good.
So, we had some exciting times over the weekend, I'm sure.
Yeah, I bet we did. Yeah. Lots of fun times, that's for sure.
Yeah, I had some fun with Rebecca Smith and Yvette Ortiz.
Yeah.
With the Surrey Hospice over the weekend.
Right.
So they had a pretty cool event. They were roasting and toasting Shell Boosie.
Boosie.
Yeah, he's actually on CNKW. He does like a home improvement sort of thing.
You mean Shell Buzzy?
Buzzy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Buzzy. Yeah.
I only know the Shell Buzzy who does home renovations and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's
kind of an
guy.
Aspirant on it.
Yeah. So I had fun. I got to take lots of pictures of him. It was his birthday sort of thing.
Just that easy. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anyways,
there was a lot of that stuff flying around. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, we've got Paul Gilbert, who's online right now. He's the member for the BC Disability Caucus. Bill, Paul, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you doing these days?
Very good. We've been busy.
Yeah.
I bet you have, yeah.
So today's theme of conversation is supposed to be clawbacks, right?
Yes, the what Shane Simpson calls the asset and income tested, what was it?
On the disability plan?
Income and asset tested program of last resort.
Okay.
So if you have any money, conceivably, if they have any money from any other sources, then they're going to take that if you have disability, if you're on disability, mm-hmm. or if you have more income in your family than you get on disability, then you don't qualify for disability.
Right.
Those things have impacts. They have outcomes that the government isn't paying attention to.
Let's go deeper on that.
Yeah, because I right off the bat I can think of a few issues. If we take, for example, elder care, and because a larger group of our population is aging out, trying to pay for health care and things like that is like it becomes a terrible strain on the family. So how can you say that if somebody is going to be if somebody's disabled, it's going to be the same situation?
Yeah.
And so we're talking like in elder care, you're talking like up to a 20-year strain on a family. So disabilities is going to be even longer than that.
Yeah. Well, one of the major problems with the government policy is they force people on disabilities, on provincial disability benefits, to take CPP, Canada Pension Plan, early at age 60. And they don't do that in most other provinces because they recognize that it violates the charter.
Okay.
So that means that the person at age 60 and 65 ends up with a 36% reduction in their retirement income. It's all all because of this. They've taken this money early that they don't actually get. The money is just given to the government, and they use it to pay for the fact that they're giving these people disability benefits. So it has a long term consequence of permanent poverty for seniors.
Right.
So that's one of the things that's a very popular component of the planning that we're putting together for doing a class action lawsuit against the government, because that's actually violates the Constitution. It violates the Charter.
Right.
The other thing that actually really is big in my mind. I don't know if it's big in everybody else's, but it's big in my mind because it has its serious, severe impacts. Is they when they look at a person that's on disability, or a person that's qualifying for applying for disability, or somebody that's on it, and they end up living with somebody, they deem them to have a family income. After three, if somebody moves in with you, if you're on disability benefits, after 3 months, you're deemed to be married.
Right, and that's not exactly a true statement either.
No, it's not. It's the other legislation. It's 7 years, but the legislation governing income assistance and disability benefits, it's 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So. That leaves them powerless and dependent upon the person they're living with. And the government's not taking into account the staggeringly high levels of physical, sexual, and domestic abuse experienced by the people with disabilities, especially the domestic abuse. We did a campaign where we sent out all sorts of faxes and distributed information on that because we've done research on domestic abuse and people with disabilities, and for men for males, domestic abuse with disabilities, domestic abuse is about as bad. It's at the level that women who are non-disabled experience. For women with disabilities, it's staggeringly high. We don't know exactly. The research we've done is from the UK and Australia, because there's not been any research here that we can find.
Well, one of the things with the U.S. and Canada, as far as domestic abuse is concerned, one, our society will only allow women to report it, because men can't be abused, and two, both countries, the same with people with disabilities, they try to limit a voice.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I'm not surprised that there isn't any research done on that.
No. Well, any issue that affects, that's one of the things in our post that we've distributed. When they do violence statistics on anybody, they generally screen out information about the disabled, or they don't collect segments of the population because they don't go to institutions, et cetera.
Yeah.
There was a group of there was a women's organization in Australia doing research on violence against women, and they screened out information on disabled women because they didn't see it as fitting that their experiences were different, so they weren't really women any longer. They were disabled women, and there was an outcry in Australia over that. But that's the problem. They were. As I keep on thinking, the disabled really only have themselves, each other to rely on, because they do get screened out of any other identity groups they belong to, for the most part.
Yeah, well, it's considered the like you said, the experience isn't the same, so it's not viable statistics.
Well, they claim that it doesn't fit with their statistics, with their data gathering. Mm-hmm. Which is a problem.
Yeah.
Because women with disabilities should be their experiences should be recognized someplace.
Right. You know.
But the powerlessness and dependence of having somebody deemed to be your spouse or somebody who is your spouse, and you have no recourse, no resources to get away from them if they're abusing you, which includes things like the fact that if you need help to do something, they won't provide it, or out and out physical abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving people in that circumstance by government policy is really, I can't think of any other word, but outrageous. So that's why we've been disseminating the information, because it's not talked about and it's not reached the government it seems to be completely oblivious to the fact that it's happening.
Right.
Because on purpose, I suppose. But they, the government claws back death benefits, income tax returns, educational grants for people who are trying to go to school, a host of other revenues that, rather than balancing these against the amounts that they allow the disabled to earn, they're allowing the disabled to earn $12,000 a year, but any of this stuff they claw back right away. Our suggestion is that, instead of having family income as a criteria, every single person with disabilities should be receiving an individual amount for the disability, plus any additional amount for children.
Yeah, I was going to say some sort of, what kind of an amount are they talking about?
Anything that supersedes what you would normally get on disability benefits, or even mm-hmm. touches on it, that you get a reduction dollar per dollar for what your spouse is making.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if a family gets a certain amount, if your spouse makes more than that, you get nothing.
Mm. Right.
But if you saw each person with a disability as a distinct individual, that regardless of whether or not they have a partner, that would make them a lot safer. They could leave their domestic relationship.
Right.
Right. One, they could leave in cases of abuse, and two, it would relieve a lot of strain and stress on relationships, because a lack of income and a need of care actually adds a strain to a relationship. Even
Definitely.
If that person's trying to be as loving as possible, there's still a strain, a stress that can put that person caring for the person with disabilities into bad health themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, we've been working on this for quite some time, and people have been we've been talking to people whose relationships have come to an end because their partner can't handle the financial burden of being the breadwinner completely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, a good relationship goes south because of government policy, or lots of people who have been living apart for a decade or more, mm-hmm. because if they live together, then the government would deem them married.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly makes things a lot more expensive when you have to operate two households.
True. Mm.
But it really doesn't make sense. I mean, they'll allow people to make $12,000 a year, but if they get an educational grant because they're trying to get off of disability benefits by getting an education, they see that as income, and it's taken away from them.
Yeah, so... I was going to say, for people that are starting to get on, I wouldn't say starting to get on disability, but for example, if you are permanently injured, you weren't disability until you had an accident or some sort of a thing, and you now have disability. Is there some sort of a difficulty getting those kind of things?
Well, if you qualify for WCB, the WCB is clawed back as well.
Okay.
So It affects anybody that actually doesn't, unless you're making a huge disability check from WCB, you're going to probably end up on provincial disability benefits.
Okay.
Especially with the income levels people are getting nowadays out there.
Right.
It affects an enormous number of people, not just through the clawbacks of other income, as they call it,
mm-hmm.
but because there's all sorts of people who are disqualified from receiving disability benefits because they have a spouse or if your child makes money, they'll take that dollar for dollar off your disability amount as well.
Mm.
So your child isn't able to get ahead either.
Right.
Yeah, but you're also including the family budget as well, the family involvement as well, because I don't know, how much is it for a federal family budget?
I haven't memorized that one.
Oh, okay.
All
right. I thought you knew it on top of your head, so.
Yeah. But now we're talking about putting a strain on the next generation of people.
Yes.
It's almost as though the government's saying, well, you're impoverished, so we're just going to keep you impoverished and make sure that your whole family line stays in bad health. I see the point of why we need this class action to go through, you know?
Yes. I believe it can win fairly easily because all sorts of other provinces, well, with the CPP clawback, because all sorts of other provinces have already recognized it as a violation of the Charter.
Mm-hmm.
And the Charter supersedes any legislation they have. I mean, people have told me that it's not policy, it's legislation, so you won't win, but legislation can't violate the Charter.
Mm.
So we're collecting names of people who are interested in participating either to help us promote the issue or to actually participate in a class action lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll connect with the a bunch of lawyers and find out how they can help us, because no point in bringing them in until we have a group of people who are interested in participating. But yeah, it's not a quick win, but I think it's a win. Being forced into dire poverty at when you retire just seems so cruel.
Yeah. Or in the cases of their children is like, well, here, let's make sure we slap on an extra bill that you have to take care of to keep you from getting ahead and moving forward with your life and your own and any new family that you want to create, right?
Yes, and if somebody I found it really outrageous that they would take people's if you're a disabled student, you get a grant, you can get grants for tutoring and things like that, but the government wants to keep that money.
Mm-hmm.
How are you supposed to get ahead if the government's going to make it so that you can't afford to go to school?
I'm on for a station break. Can you hold on for a moment?
Certainly.
Okay, we're talking to Paul Gilbert, who is the BC Disability Caucus member, talking about lots of clawbacks on disability. But we'll come right back in a moment. This is the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of each year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting exclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adaptive technology, and more. For more information, contact your local stations about the National Access Day.
Your cell phone already has an FM receiver chip installed in it, but major Canadian telecommunication and mobile companies have blocked access to this free system to listen to the radio in favor of charging for data streaming. With access to the FM chip, your phone can still receive broadcasts and updates during an emergency, even if the cell towers are down. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
Mm-hmm. We're back on the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn. Along with me is Michael Rubin-Cloggs. And on the phone is Paul Gilbert. And were talking about some of the clawbacks and mostly on disability and on the homes and what Shane Simpson was talking about. Michael, maybe you can add some more input.
You know, Paul, you were talking about couples having to split up. I'm really focused on the relationship part of this because I know what it's like to have to carry my wife around because she has a hemoglobin and an iron problem. Her blood does not want to accept iron into it, and she has trouble building hemoglobin. And you know, she's still trying to work full time. We're trying to build a business, and then we have this other aspect that we have to get her to the doctor's appointment. We have to get her to the blood transfusion or an iron transfusion like there was today before I could get here, you know. And it's a lot of stress on people. And then we're lucky that we haven't hit the financial strain. It's just a scheduling strain at this point. But you know, it's a big issue to claw back and then put people in a financial strain. And Paul, you're talking about this class action to help people realize that the legislation or the policy can't be this way.
Yeah, we'll be proceeding with that, and all we're aiming at eliminating all the clawbacks, because quite simply, these people have a right to a life. It's at the same time, the thing that I find so outrageous about the government's attitude about the disabled is that at the same time they've done nothing to address the fact that the people with disabilities who can work face incredible levels of employment discrimination. But the government's programs are mostly cosmetic, when they exist at all. Mm-hmm. That issue, they're not doing anything about that, and they're not planning on doing any initiatives to address domestic abuse of the disabled, and initiatives to reduce the poverty of seniors that they've forced into poverty by taking their CPP. It seems that they're willing to do these things to save money, but they don't take into account the human cost. I mean, why should people with disabilities have to live alone? Why shouldn't they be able to have a relationship and housing like everybody else?
Right. You know. you know what? For some people that are listening that may not understand completely what a clawback would be, let's try to define that a little closer, because in my mind, what a clawback would be, okay, I'm allowing you to collect your CPP, so I'm going to reduce your welfare on this end.
Oh,
that would be a clawback.
Yes, if they allowed you to collect your CPP, but they actually force you to collect your CPP.
Right.
You don't have any choice. If you don't apply for CPP, they'll cut off your provincial disability benefits. Mm-hmm. And then you don't see the CPP. It goes straight into the government's coffers.
Right. So, what are some other really strong examples of money that where you should be able to get enough money to get ahead, but we're going to take that back from you because you don't we deserve that money because we're giving you this.
Well, one of the ones is the is things like the educational grants that people get. You're allowed to go to school, but we're going to take the money you get to help you go to school. Okay. Your death benefits that you receive if your spouse passes away and your family's without a spouse, mm-hmm. Those are to help you function as a single person family with but they take those away. Mm-hmm. These are just cruel. I mean, they're just really cruel, and they're not recognizing why these benefits exist. That there's reasons why people need them. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense. It's just bean counting. It's bean counting and it's like the Grinch that stole Christmas. They're maybe
or Scrooge.
we're chuckling at this because it's more of a nervous thing. Like, oh God, it's like this is, but it shouldn't be this way. It doesn't have to be this way, does it?
No. I mean, it's not like the government is impoverished. The economy is doing reasonably well, and from a Keynesian perspective, if you inject money into people's pockets or allow them to keep the money that they get because they need it for one reason or another, it actually is a driver in the economy. There's no better way of actually making the economy healthy than to allow people than to have people who actually are going to spend the money here have it. Mm-hmm. The government seems to forget that they used to be Keynesians. I don't know what they are now, exactly now, but that from an economic standpoint, it doesn't work. When they said they want to build a better CBDC, let's build one that's not cruel.
Right.
But yeah, I just find I think a lot part of the thing about the family income is that. In the minds of people who aren't disabled, it's hard to imagine people with disabilities having families and having intimate partners at all. They don't see us as regular human beings. They see us as something else. I don't know what. But sexuality in the disabled makes the non-disabled really uncomfortable in a lot of cases.
Say it again.
The fact that the disabled are sexual beings doesn't sit well with people who are non-disabled very well. Mm. It's very uncomfortable for them. So having a relationship, they just can't grasp it for some reason, the fact that that's an important part of everybody's life, not just people who aren't disabled. So actually impact in stepping in and treating it as a financial relationship only is just it's just a rejection of these people's humanity. It's ableist.
Hmm. Wow. I just hadn't actually thought of it's like that. Rather you're disabled or not, it's like we all need to feel human. We all need touch.
Yeah,
we all need feelings.
Yeah, you know, it's like we all need to. It's a serious part of the human condition. It's a serious part of living. It doesn't matter what even bacteria it crowds together.
Yeah,
come on. I mean, I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to make light of what you're saying. It's serious. I'd never heard anyone say anything like that before, that people that are disabled don't deserve to have a relationship.
Hmm. Many people with disabilities are forced not to have relationships, or at least not to have relationships with somebody. A lot of the feedback we get is that people, they can't have relationships because they're disabled, and because the government claws all their money away, and treats them like paternalistically, like they challenge the fact that people are living together all the time, even if they're because gay rights are accepted now. Even if you're living with a woman or a same sex partner, they try to assign you into a common law relationship now.
Well, I kind of see it as similar situation for elderly people. Remember what happened when the Liberal government separates elderly couples from mm-hmm. hospitals.
Yeah, it's cruel.
Yeah.
It is cruel.
Yeah. I've heard about this in a lot of care homes where the couple was married for 50, 60 years.
Oh,
they
yeah,
wound up
time.
In a care home, and they're not allowed to live together. It's yeah. like, what's that about? It's like, you know, how do you think they got to live so damn long? Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like they had a human touch with, you know.
They had human feelings
yes,
with each other.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a serious... it's a serious part of our lives that mm-hmm. that we have to be able to cuddle and touch each other, you know.
Yeah. Taking away those sorts of supports have real health consequences.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The government they like to talk about evidence-based policies, but if they actually, that's why we pushed hard to get them to set up a disability ministry, because they don't seem to have a lot of information about what it's like to have a disability, and but they have policies that impact the disabled without responsibly knowing much about them. They don't have a single disabled MLA, and so we have to keep advocating to try to educate them, because their policies really do have health consequences, and we don't want people to have miserable lives simply because the government wants to collect a little bit more money.
No.
No, definitely not. You know.
But you know, it's There's a lot of people who are signing up to participate, but we could use thousands. Coordinating it will be difficult, but there are thousands and thousands of people in BC that are affected by these clawbacks, especially with all the different range of clawbacks, from education to death benefits. It's any sorts of revenue is the government will grasp, despite the fact that saying that you can actually earn $1,200 a year extra.
I hear you.
I always find it interesting that you're allowed to earn $1,200 a year, but they're not doing anything about employment discrimination.
Okay.
So how do you earn $1,200 a year when employers won't hire you?
And you are saying 1,200, not 12,000, right?
Sorry, 12,000. I keep on slipping those commas into the wrong place.
No, it's okay, because I'm like 1,200. It's like,
no, that's not.
That's
very
only
much.
That barely covers a month's rent.
Well, yeah.
Like, come on. But that's another issue that, of course, people, if you get along with somebody well enough and you decide to be roommates, and then all of a sudden they decide that, oh, we're going to cut things back because you're roommating with somebody, just because you can actually afford to have a house or an apartment, you know. It's like, and say... If, for instance, what we're saying here is, if a female and a male decide to roommate, just simply roommate, they're not romantically involved, just to share expenses, that the government's going to say, oh well, wait a second, so we're going to take money away from you.
Yeah,
and it shouldn't be that way.
I'm fortunate that I'm not on disability benefits, provincial disability benefits, because I had a homeless person live with me for a year and a half and sleep in my living room. Mm-hmm. If they'd known about that, they actually didn't have any income. I was helping them to get to apply for disability and things like that.
Right.
Just having somebody that's in your home, they'll decide, just to save money, that you're in a relationship even when you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And she would have had lost much of her disability if they knew that she was sharing a place with somebody. after she actually qualified for it.
And you're just trying to be a good Samaritan, so you know, let's punish all good deeds, right?
Yeah.
It just seems that the more you punish, either by marriage, work, or any other type of disability, that the other, I wouldn't say if the government gives you money or any, like I said, like I mentioned, the marriage part, if your money is more wealthy, they may have cut you back. If you're working at a fancy restaurant or fancy bank or whatever it is, they're taking money away from that sort of situation, and or any other type of disability that other money is putting back to you, but the BC government is saying, no, you have a lot of money, so we're not going to give that money to you at all. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, their goal is to, well, I think it's more if your spouse has a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine that actually has a sporadic domestic abuse in their life, their spouse has a lot of money. They don't.
Right.
their spouse doesn't want to give them money. But if they can't actually get disability benefits, so they can't get out of there.
Right.
It doesn't make sense to me. They really desperately need to try to understand what people with disabilities face in BC, what the disability experience is, because how can they administer programs and services that where they haven't got a clue what the result of their actions are.
Mm-hmm.
It's frustrating.
Well, it seems like as much as we're trying to tell them what the experience is, they don't want to know. They have their own picture. They don't want to see what the real picture actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for a government that actually came into power claiming that they care. I mean, Michelle Mungel actually, in a speech she gave March 2nd, actually called for the elimination of all the clawbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And we agree with her. As she said during her speech, it's going to take people power to make it happen.
Right.
So we have to the disabled have to recognize that we can change this. This is illegal what they're doing.
I'm going to take a break, another break. Can you hold on for a moment?
Yes, certainly.
Okay. Paul Gilbert, who is the BC Disability Caucus, is talking on clawbacks. We will come back in a moment. You're tuned in to Community Living Show. I'm Kelly. Across from me is Michael. And again, we'll be back in a moment. The Community Living Show is stories for the people with disabilities, self-advocacy, adaptive technology, and many other issues, along with accessibility issues. If you want to participate and are a member of any of the NCRA radio stations, including this station that you're listening to in the area, or if you have any story idea and want to become involved in the technician personnel, please email us. Our email address is communitylivingradio@gmail.com. No experience necessary. People with disability or non-disability are welcome to the show.
It's not just rich people that own the media.
But by leaving out the most important things you need to know, they can elevate awareness to a new all-time low.
I own my media.
I own my media.
I own my media.
I own my media.
I own my
media. I own my media.
The Media Co-op is a grassroots national news network that's owned by its members.
But if it's just left out, can you say the paper lied? A lot of things that happened didn't happen after all. If there's no one in the forest who will put it in the news, I guess the tree didn't fall.
Join us today at mediacoop.ca/join.
I'm joining today. You should too.
Power Chord Heavy Metal Radio, bringing you the best metal for over 30 years on CITR. Tune in every Saturday from 1 to 3.
This is the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. My name is Kelly Rayburn. Across from me is Michael Ruben Cloggs. And we're talking about disabilities on clawbacks. And what no way to handle these kind of disabilities is Paul Gilbert, who is from Victoria, and he's a member of BC Disability Caucus. So we're on to the final segment here. And Michael?
It's a really touchy subject because you've gotten into some really deep issues, deep human issues with it's just not money. It's also relationships and things like that, you know,
and people's dreams, the dream of being able to actually have an occupation.
Yeah. Well, it brings me to this. I guess you guys are working with a human rights advocate also.
Oh, yes. Well, disability rights are human rights.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, but it's just, I guess you, I know you always think of the financial, but when, I've done some light research by listening to some other media reports on caregiving and relationships and things like that, and the strain it actually puts on the whole families and stuff like that, and the government should step up and help relieve some of that stress so that you don't put another group of people into bad health. You know, but they don't seem to want to see it that way.
Yes, I know someone personally. I've known them for decades, and they've been the only income. Their spouse can't qualify for income because they make an income, so they have to make twice as much. It's a real strain on them. It's very difficult for a disabled person's partner to shoulder the whole burden. Mm-hmm. Of financial burden. It's it's not just the people with disabilities who are being denied. It's the whole families are being denied the quality of life. It's not fair. It's just there's no reason for it. It's just a lack of thought. I keep on feeling they're not. That's why I call it ableist. They're not interested in the circumstances that people with disabilities live in for some reason. I didn't vote for these people because they were going to be bean counters.
Yeah.
I voted for them because they represented a move forward in human rights from the last government.
Yeah.
So, with that being said, has there been a serious, From the perspective of the BC Disability Caucus, has there been any move forward as far as rights are concerned?
No. The government is implementing the plan they promised before the election, but the disabled have been marginalized for forever, and these most of these policies that impact their incomes were brought in by the NDP in the 90s, so. They actually are the ones that are responsible for them. But the human rights, no, I don't think that we've made much. A little bit more income is a good thing, but it's not solving the real problem, all the problems that the disabled face. For me, it's always been the fact that people with disabilities need support in the workplace rather than the government just ignoring the fact that they're marginalized and their employers won't accommodate them, so they end up with their disability ends up becoming more and more pronounced, and they've maintained the same liberals approach to things like physiotherapy, where people with disabilities have to degenerate physically because the government won't provide them with proper medical supports.
Mm.
It's a horrible situation because people see their bodies going and there's no help to do anything about it.
Right.
But that's off the clawback issue, but it's very close to a lot of people's hearts because nobody wants to see their body degenerate and be forced into a wheelchair and reduce life expectancy.
Well, it's some of the things that keep people out of a wheelchair would be like physiotherapy and things like that, and there's limitations to how much you can receive of that, right?
Oh, it's very limited, and mm-hmm. often the government cut it, the Liberals cut it significantly. But even if they increase it has to be part of a plan because they drove a lot of physiotherapists out of the province when the Liberals cut what people can get. And there has to be more education of physiotherapists. It's the same problem they have with special education teachers. They don't have enough of them, and children with disabilities are not getting the supports they need. They get sent home halfway through the day, or rather than continue their education.
Right.
The disabled have always been the last ones to be thought of. Most human rights initiatives ignore them. Diversity hiring programs ignore them. We're the largest minority group on the planet, but we don't get the attention that you'd think that would warrant.
Right. So, I get that. There's an interesting question. Is there even more discrimination if we consider race with disability, or is it going to be?
Oh yes. Intersectionality is a huge problem. If you have Indigenous populations, there's a high percentage of disability in Indigenous populations, and mm-hmm. the government's not doing anything about zeroing in on trying to address the needs of Indigenous people with disabilities. LGBTQ populations are seriously marginalized in employment and in other ways, and the ones that are disabled are on their own, and they don't. People are doubly, triply, or quadruply marginalized for having other identities, and women with disabilities naturally have always been marginalized more than men with disabilities. I know the men with disabilities won't like me saying that, but the level of physical violence, sexual violence that they experience is just staggering.
Right.
And there's no real initiatives being taken by government to do anything about it, to address why it's happening and stop it. Sorry to be such a downer.
Yeah, it's almost like they don't want certain groups of people to be able to succeed at all.
Well, one of the things I read about a year ago, there was a report, a study done on visible minorities that come to Canada as immigrants, and a lot of visible minority women end up with health and health issues and disabilities because of their marginalization here. Mm-hmm. And so then they're perfectly healthy when they show up, and then they're marginalized so much that they end up disabled, and then naturally as a doubly marginalized person, it's even worse. And a lot of communities that are immigrants don't find it appropriate to reach out to government. There's a communitarian sort of ethic where the family should look after the people. So it's hard for these people to reach out to government supports because it's not approved of in their communities.
Mm. Well, I guess some of the where people come from when they're immigrants, in some of those countries they don't have the social programs that they do here, and the government says, well, you're family, so you take care of your own. Mm-hmm. So I guess some of that culture comes with them, but how do you reach out to them and tell them that, hey, you can get help from the government?
No, you can get help from the government. Yes, that's part of what the Disability Caucus is always trying to do. We're always trying to reach out to other communities, to LGBT and indigenous populations and visible minority populations, to everybody. Because the disabled are everywhere. We're a huge we're over 14% of the population, not a very if collectively we decided what government was going to come in, we could decide, we could do it. That's the sort of power we actually have, but we have to support each other and come together and decide to fight for our rights. Mm-hmm. It's hard for a lot of people with disabilities, though, because their disabilities cause them to actually really slow them down. They takes longer to do things, and they don't have as much stamina in a lot of cases. So we encourage people to participate as much as they can. And we try to support as many people as much as we can as well, but recognizing that people with disabilities can't contribute as much as somebody who doesn't have an impairment sometimes is just part of the picture when you're talking about disability rights. Mm-hmm. It makes it easier to marginalize, unfortunately. Because it's harder for us to fight.
Right.
But, I mean, when you consider, one of the things that always comes to mind is in the 40s, Canada actually had a big hand in writing and then signed the Charter for Human Rights, the International Declaration of Human Rights. And pay equity was part of that charter. But
right.
We've not seen pay equity yet.
No.
Sometimes you wonder what it's going to take to wake people up, to wake up the government and see, hey, what does it take to wake them up and get them to see that the policy is adding more struggle than what it needs to have.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's one of the things the caucus is trying to do. We're just inches away from 13,000 members now.
That's quite the voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're gradually. A lot of it. Being disabled, there's a learning process that you go through if you're disabled when you're young. You gradually learn that it's not your resume or what have you that's keeping you out of work. It's the fact that they're screening you out real fast. 1% of people, if they can tell you have a disability, they only interview 1%. So out of 100 resumes, you get one interview. It's staggering how serious it is. But as you grow up and get older and you have these experiences, it's hard to tell if they're discriminating against you or not. But the stats are out there. Mm. There's been research on all these things, and we know that discrimination is rampant.
Well, we're pretty much almost out of time. Thank you for joining us. And I know you have a Facebook page on Disability Caucus as well. So maybe you should give our listeners, if you want to get more information.
We're at BC Disability on Facebook. Just look up. Just search out BC Disability Caucus, and you'll find our Twitter address and our Facebook page.
Mm. Do you have an email account?
BCDisabilityCaucus@gmail.com.
All right.
Great. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks again for joining us, Paul.
Take care now.
Care.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. All right, so that's Paul from Victoria, and he's been... how long we had him for almost over the summer, right?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. He's been a friend of the show for quite some time now.
Yeah, so he
always has something really good to bring to the table.
Mm-hmm. He brings us good information on it too.
Yeah,
and if you want to email us, email address is communityliving@gmail.com. We're on well, we're supposed to have three, but we're on the basic two networks in Vancouver. One of us is on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming online at CITR.ca. We broadcast every Tuesdays from 1 to 2 here right now. And, of course, we are streaming live and broadcasting live right now.
Yeah.
On our second part of the show is on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. And we are broadcasting through on their website, www.coopradio.org or cooperadio.org. And we're also on the National Campus Radio Association Network's Radio Program Exchange. Go to previous.ncra.ca for a community program, community exchange program for that matter.
Yeah. So. I would like to remind everybody who may reside outside of the area and they're visiting and they're listening in to us, please, when you get home, contact your community radio station and ask them to pick up our show.
Mm-hmm. Pick up the Community Living Show.
Yes, since it is right there on the program exchange, right?
Yes, and you also have another show that you have, the Balanced Living Show.
Yeah, the Balanced Living TV show. We're still crowdfunding for the broadcasting costs for 2018. So it's real simple. If you just hashtag Balanced Living TV show when you go onto Kickstarter, and you will find our crowdfund.
Right.
So it's real simple that way. We just left everything as the hashtag.
All right. Have a great day and a great life, and we'll see you all again next week. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Snatches of music, whole orchestras play inside our heads.
And then it explodes into this enormous collage of what this present moment looks like, what it feels like, and what it sounds like. It explodes into this enormous collage. And in this moment,
rather gruesome, rather wrinkles like a walnut, and with the consistency of mushroom. Hello, everyone. Welcome to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory in Vancouver at the University of British Columbia. My name is Mia. This show is called Particles and Waves.